Good evening. Welcome to another Dang Holden Forum. My name is Jeff Kirsten. I am, in my other life, a teacher at the University of Puget Sound. I teach communication, which includes the teaching people how to run forums and things. I tell this to you so that you will trust me when I play the role of benevolent cop. I'll pay attention to who would like to interact when, and I'll try and make sure that there's equal interaction from all parties who would like to be equally interactive. So we'll begin. Dr. Harbaugh will speak first, and then the most holy, high, grand poobah, Witt, will speak next. And after that, I'll play just the procedural cop, and I want to leave you with just the thought that as we're talking, help each other, okay? Help the people with whom you disagree. Help them be understood, and then see what you can do to add to that.
Okay. I wasn't quite sure how to get started tonight, and Witt and I were discussing how to get some of these ideas across, and as we discussed, Jeff also suggested perhaps a little personal story to get into it. Why am I interested in patriarchy from a personal point of view? And so I thought I might share just a little personal story of how I was affected just last summer by a very simple kind of thing that happened in a church setting, a gathering of church people. It was a Lutheran setting, and I was there. I'm a single adult, I'm a single parent, and I was there with my two daughters, and I was also there with a very close friend of mine. And we were going to participate in a Eucharist. We had been at this setting for about 5 days, and we were all sitting. I was sitting with my friend and my two daughters, and there was this room about this size, and it was really quite packed with intergenerational kinds of folks, families and singles, and you know, staff people from some other place. And the pastor, when it was time to come up for receiving communion, said, okay, now this is the order in which we're going to receive communion. The single adults will go first as a group, and then each family unit will go next, and I will serve the head of the household, and then the head of the household will serve the rest of the family. Well, there were four dilemmas immediately created. The first dilemma was I a single adult? Was I head of a household? Were we a family unit? The other dilemma was that my daughter, Nicole, was not yet prepared for her first communion, and she was beginning to see some of the very young children were receiving communion from their fathers. And she looked at me and said, am I supposed to take communion? And I looked around and was noticing, too, that all the very young children were receiving communion. Anyway, that was another dilemma. And my older daughter was a staff person, and the other instruction was, and all the staff will receive communion last as a group. So so my friend, my male friend, and I looked at each other and thought, well, now do we commune as single adults? But by the time we were done discussing that, the single adults had already communed. And so that opportunity was gone. And so then we had to decide, okay, I guess we could go up as a family unit. But when we got up there, we didn't know who was the head of the household. Because we weren't living in a household, we weren't living together. So the pastor assumed, because he was a man, that he was the head of the household, and so he communed him first and handed him the stuff so that he would commune the rest of us. And And he said, I don't know, I'm not the head of the household. And so the pastor got very confused at that point. And then didn't know quite what to do with me. And so he communed me, and then he said, are you the head of the household? And I guess. And so I then, by this time, my older daughter had decided that she was a part of our family. And so she came up too. And she wasn't sure whether to receive communion from me or wait till the staff received communion. So, but she did. And then Nicole finally decided, no, I don't want to receive communion because I really am not prepared for this. So I gave her a blessing. Anyway, that, and my daughter then went up a second time for the staff because she didn't know where she belonged. None of us knew where we belonged that day. Just a real simple example of how our assumptions and this patriarchal system create real dilemmas for those of us who are living in non-traditional kinds of ways and the struggles. It's funny when I look back on it, but at the time, my feelings were just, I really wanted to just leave. Yeah. I just wanted to walk out. But I was on, we were sitting in a corner, and in order to get to the door, we would have had to go past everybody receiving communion. And we didn't know how to get out. And of course, we couldn't even sit still and not choose to go forward because the pastor nodded to us. It was time for us to come. And
how did he know when it was time for you to come?
That's the whole point.
He assumed it.
He assumed it and made a lot of assumptions. So that's sort of the introduction. And, I'll share more as we get on, I'm sure, about where the church, but part of what I was supposed to share right now, and I think my time is...
Well, no, if you're not done, you need to keep talking.
Well, part of what I was going to share is that in the ELCA, there are some efforts being made to take a look at the patriarchal system. One of those efforts that's happening right now is a policy statement that was passed by the National Council of Churches on family violence and its relationship to the patriarchal system that we have in the church and how that system helps to perpetuate family violence and all kinds of other things. But the policy statement suggests that the churches need to take a repentant stance for the role that it's played in helping to perpetuate the violence. And the ELCA, this policy statement has passed in the National Council of Churches, and the ELCA has made a decision to try to follow some of the recommendations. There's a lot of recommendations, specific recommendations about how it can be put forward and implemented in the church to begin to change some of that patriarchal system to eliminate some of the violence that it has helped to perpetuate. Anyway, some of us have been put in charge of developing a strategy for implementing this. Mary Pellar and I have been asked to lead this effort, and part of what I'm hoping to get from this forum, and this sort of a selfish thing for me, is to hear some of the views that are being raised here to get some ideas of what needs to happen to help to make some of that different so that there may be some things that are new in the church. That's it.
Thank you. Before I go to His Holiness, would you like more light? I turned these off because they're annoying. I didn't know I was turning those off too.
This is nice.
Anyone? Nice means everyone's going to go to sleep now.
This is nice.
The window's not glaring off there into my eyes.
Yeah, it's yours.
Okay, quit.
Thanks. Well, Sherry's story is such a wonderful illustration of kind of what we're up against. And in my view, because the historical moment is such that the bell, only a few days living in the same place with Nancy Binion. No. we're in a historical moment where these power systems are now genuinely threatened in a number of ways, and yet patriarchal power is reasserted despite the fact that it has little to do with the reality of most of our lives. I mean, that's part of what your story says to me, is that, you know, the sort of normative two-parent, 2.5 kids living behind a picket fence never was a reality to the extent that it has been promoted as myth in American society. And yet, and now we know it's not the norm. And yet, you know, we still have to live with the way in which a relatively few people, and they are people who look more or less like me, continue to benefit by a power structure and a status quo. So, I appreciate your story. I have a couple of points to make that should be obvious, but they're so obscured that I want to make them anyway. And one of them is that as a white male who is just trying to do it differently and trying to live against the way in which things have been structured to benefit a few and marginalize so many, one of the things that I'm keenly aware of is that we must undo the patriarchal male dominant systems, not only because women are oppressed by them, but because the whole structure is sick. And if we use the image of the body of Christ, which I know is in some ways overused in our communities, but it carries a power for a lot of us, then the body is partially paralytic, if we talk about the church, as it exists. In other words, we're not talking about trying to move from sort of one identifiable setup to another identifiable setup without value judgment. The reality is that our churches and our society are hobbled, are crippled by the way in which input and power and inclusion and community is organized now. And it really, in my mind, it is like blood or nerves being cut. There's not synaptic movement up and down the structure. And so what one finds in sick institutions, and this I have to include the church, which is my beloved institution, what we find are churches that operate in ways that are not well, not healthy. You know, in a human body, if the blood's not flowing all around, then some part of the body is injured. And what I find are that, you know, you use this kind of imagery, head of household, the kind of unfortunate New Testament language we still seize upon as male head to some kind of structure, then the head is making very bad decisions because not getting enough blood, enough input, mm-hmm. enough from the whole body. I mean, and we experience this, but we don't name it very much. It's true in our government systems, and it's true in the church. It's true in the university. One part of the story I have to tell, which I haven't, I don't want to go to in detail because Christy will fall over in a dead faint because she's heard it too many times. Which I haven't talked about a lot this week being here, is I'm leaving my job at the university where I work, and in Washington, And it is partially because the system, there's wonderful work to do, but the system is so sick and has beat me up so badly because I have tried to resist the direction of an academic institution where a few white men and a couple of white European-American women who are not critical have a chokehold on the institution. I mean, it's a sick place. The culture operates according to such alienated patterns of doing things. And if you don't go get with the flow, you know, then you're in trouble. And that's one point I have to make about patriarchy in the church, is that anyone who, now, I don't want to blur the fact that men still have the option to choose and to be a part or not be a part of these structures. That's a big difference. But reality is anyone who opposes this kind of alienated power in any human institution is out. And so women are the most obvious marginated and group in a patriarchal church. But also anyone else who doesn't fit the upwardly mobile white male model, which means gays and lesbians, it means people of color, it means anyone who doesn't fit the culture, the style, the way of doing things. So my concern about the patriarchal church is that it's not a well institution, and that the body of Christ really is not healthy and moving. I want to give a couple of quick examples about that. One, I was a staff person for a National Council of Churches working group, task force, for 1 year when I was living in New York City. And I came into the group hired by one of the men who was a co-chair of this group, not really knowing what kind of, I knew what the work they did was, to work on environmental and justice issues and the connections between them, between community justice and environmental issues. It's been a growing area in the country. I didn't know anything about how the group functioned. And 3 months after I had been in a staff position, I went to the first meeting. And I sat down in the room, and there was a long table. And the way in which the conversation and the setup of the room and the relationships in terms of where people sat in the room was a case study in patriarchy. There were 5 men who were white men, over 50 years of old age, who sat at the center of the table across from each other and spoke directly to each other about agendas, purse strings, next meetings, you know, the mechanics, how to make it all happen. In a somewhat wider circle, there were people of color, people representing grassroots organization, and women, who occasionally one of these 5 men would turn to and request some information from. But it was clear in the way this group functioned, there was not, unless spoken to, the wider circle really did not have a stake and claim on the agenda. And all the decisions were transacted by basically these 5 people in the center of the table. And as I watched this sort of thing unfolding and began to kind of have a feeling of nausea, I then also watched the one woman staff person related to this group continually running for food, for notepaper, to answer the telephone. And you know, this is a case study. This is a case study on how it has worked for so long. I guess I left that meeting deciding I would either not be a part of the group or I would see what I could do to change it. And once in a while you can have an opportunity to really bring about some change, and we really did change the way the group functioned. But
can you wind up?
Yeah. 1 second. That's a long point, isn't it?
That's a long point.
Second point is that this is the way patriarchy functions, too.
I've been noticing it.
the second thing, theologically speaking, I think, is that any system dominated by one group of people, and in our society it has been men of privilege, where all the symbols are set up to benefit that group and the language reflects that group, is by, according to biblical standards, idolatrous. I mean, because no language really is adequate to talk about God and ultimate things in and of itself. To absolutize male language for God is idolatrous. God's not a man. To absolutize male language for the Trinity is idolatrous. It's not biblical. It's extra biblical. It goes against the drift of the Bible and what we learn as people of the book. To insist on male images, language, and any of that, it's idolatrous. It really is not faithful. There's another reason that we really must take up the issue of remaking the institution of the church.
Thank you, Whit. Welcome responses from you, either responses to either the presenters or just your thoughts on the issue. You might start by talking about what's old in the church with patriarchy, what's new, what sorts of things. Mike.
Well, one additional piece that I think we need to throw in order to really deal with the whole patriarchy issue is that, well, it's designed to benefit these few. It doesn't seem to me that we will really change that structure until the men of the church discover that the patriarchal structure is detrimental to them too, and that it is a system that brutalizes men as well as these other marginalized people, and it seems to me that the strategy of the ELCA in even attacking the issue is somewhat suspect in terms of appointing two women to take it on. That it really needs to be something that men attack and that men take responsibility for dismantling. And as long as it's women saying, doing the study, the male response is going to be, well, it's the feminists doing it. Rather than, this is something that we really need to take a look at, because this has to do with men and what it means to be a Christian human being.
Okay. Others?
I don't know why the church has to be so far behind some other institutions in society. I couldn't help but remember when you were talking about the meeting you attended, a meeting I attended some 10 years ago at least, and it was a meeting of a governmental agency. I don't remember the agency or the subject matter, but I remember clearly that presiding was a woman of color who headed the city agency. Also participating was a white woman who represented the federal agency, and there was a man taking notes and going for coffee.
So it does happen.
It happens elsewhere.
Okay. Others, go ahead.
I noted today during Vespers, although I really enjoyed what the girls were doing, even the girls referred to God as He and Father. I mean, even these young kids are being brought up with this language that's not inclusive. And our hymn that we sang today was Father, and I noticed one thing that I thought was really refreshing was that when we did Vespers yesterday, Michael specifically pointed out the changes in his songs, getting rid of the word he. But when we sang the doxology yesterday, one of the things that the Disciples of Christ, when we had our convention last year, They said, is your doxology inclusive? And we changed the words in our bulletin at church to not say Father, but to say God, not say He, but to say God. But it's scary when you see these 12-year-olds and 13-year-olds still referring. You know, how are we going to stop it?
Good question.
Well, my perception is that at some point it's clear to young women that the church is not reaching out to them, and they think it's...
Well, that's one solution.
Yeah. I'm in sympathy with the intent. I'm not sure in my own mind, psychologically or religiously, what it does to the person who for 25, 50, 75, or years of their life has thought of God in terms of our Father. And then suddenly the church says, no, God is not our Father. And this prayer that you've prayed so many thousands of times, you're at a loss. And I don't know the answer.
I guess my response to that would be that I agree, that's the difficulty, that as much as when I hear He, I sort of freeze up, and that's sort of all I've heard. Other people, they heard God referred to in different ways, but I thought that the point Whit made sort of clarify something for me, that perhaps someone who can only think of God as He isn't worshiping the same thing I am. And that's another interesting viewpoint that I hadn't heard about language changes. Maybe it's not the same God, but there can only be He.
Well, it seems to me that you know, the patriarchal form of society, you know, developed real early, and you know, developed after the fall, because there's real value there and there's real richness that can be in that God the Father image. But we need to not limit ourselves to that, but also include God the Mother, God the Lover, God the Friend. You know, all of these other really rich, wonderful, beautiful images, and not get stuck in the patriarchal. That seems to me.
I agree intellectually, but it's still a problem.
Yeah.
I understand what this gentleman is saying about the people who, all their life, said this word and would feel at a loss if something else was put there. But my question is, what about people like me who all my life have felt left out because the words of the church did not speak to me and in fact made me feel like I did not count? Because if God is the Father and we're created in the image of God, then I must not be in there. So I guess I would ask people to think about those people who've been left out for most of their lives. And I would also ask people to think about the church seems to be thinking about, and Holden Village is thinking about, being multicultural. My question is, how can we be multicultural if we cannot even include both genders?
Mm-hmm. Christy?
I was just going to say, I do think that it's a process, and that someone who's thought one way for 75 years doesn't go, oh, you know, now I won't do that. That it is a process of education. But I think that there is a moral absolute. Like, if you look at an issue that we've decided about, like racism or oppression of people of color, we now know that it's wrong to call somebody a nigger. Or, you know, and there's something inside us that if you hear that, you go, ooh, that hurts, you know, and it's not just in your mind, but you feel it. You feel something of what it would be like to be the receiver of that word. And so I think that it is a process, but I don't see it as a choice. I mean, I think because I think there's, it's not just like, well, it's a nice thing to do. It is, in fact, oppressive in a very fundamental way to other people not to be about that process of making that change.
I also think there are different levels and places where you deal with the issue of gender language as well as other language issues. And you do make different choices in different contexts depending on the situation. This does not mean that you're not always committed to what Christy's talking about. But for instance, as a clergy person, I don't raise the issue of the fatherhood of God at a funeral service for someone, because I know that there are times when there's a greater priority. And so I may not use fatherhood language. In fact, I don't. I would be cautious around how much I'm going to challenge people when they're in grief. That's one example. You do have to figure out what the context is. And speaking to older groups of people, I think it's really ageist not to raise certain important moral issues, with an older group of church folk. But I also think, because of the kind of accustomedness, that there is sometimes need for care there, depending on how old, where you draw a line, I don't know. But I personally, around gender language, have decided for the historical moment, even though I still can see, I've never been abused by a father. Father is a nurturing category for me, because I grew up with such a wonderful father. In great part, it's a positive. But in public worship, I never use father language at all. And I've decided that because, for the time being, I think it is has done so much injury to so many people that for a time, it's like when things get better, we can go back to it, or we can have father and mother and da, da, da. But for the time being, I've just have decided, and it may not be the perfect choice, but I have decided not to use it in public worship. Now, my private prayers, I don't think I'll injure someone. But that's part of the way I deal with it.
You raised an interesting question before. I just want to throw this out as a question you might want to respond to or you might want to ignore. And that is, are there situations where the patriarchy in the church is especially helpful or especially nasty? Maybe we could talk about it in places. You mentioned funerals. You mentioned times of grief where you wouldn't push it. But maybe there are other situations where you find it especially helpful or especially...
I don't find it helpful.
Well, I want to leave it open. I want to see what people have to say. We've heard from you. Nancy?
Well, I think the patriarchy that I'm worried about is so far removed from the language issue that we've been talking about right now. And I guess I can understand that people would say that what language we use to talk about God is related to the patriarchy issue, but I'm much more concerned about leadership itself, or ways of operating and working, than I am about language about God. And I will admit that there's a connection, but
why is that?
Well, I'm sure part of it's very personal. I mean, if I had to choose between God as father and God as mother, I would choose a father. And that is based on personal experience. But I'm also very aware of many families that I know where father is just a total non-entity. Mm-hmm. A father is somebody that you happen to see walking down the street now and then and say, well, that guy's my father. That's the total connection with this person. Mm-hmm. So, I'm willing to see that there's a whole range of experiences about that. But But I'm concerned about other stuff. Mm-hmm. And I really, Sherry, I'd love you to talk more about what was the statement that the ELCA acted on and whether or not you see any hope. I mean, I guess I feel real trapped in a lot of what I think is really the structure. Whether or not there happen to be two women on a committee or four women on a committee in certain situations, and, you know, whether or not I end up chairing the committee or not,
yeah.
You know, that's all window dressing still, I think.
Go for it.
I think that if we look at the reality of the structure of the ELCA, we know we've got 65 bishops, all of whom are male. We know that most of the executive directors in the church-wide office are men, predominantly white males. And we know that a lot of the decision-making is made there, in that very body that I just described. I'm trying to choose my words carefully because we're being taped and I don't want to lose my job. This policy statement on family violence is an important one because there is a group within the church-wide structure that has been given the task of trying to implement some recommendations that could really change some of the structure itself. And I'm not sure that those implications have even been thought about by the group that has given us the assignment. Mm-hmm. Even though Mary and I have been given the assignment of chairing this group, we're not limited to just make this group be female. We can choose anyone that we want to help to implement this. But I think the task is really not one that we're going to necessarily be successful with. But Wood and I talked earlier, and I've talked with some of the rest of you about being faithful. And I talked to Dorothy, I think, too, about this, about being faithful to the process. And so we sort of move along and do what we can, knowing full well that the impact is probably not going to be felt in my lifetime. But somewhere down the line, we know we've made a whole lot of progress. If you look at the historical kinds of things, women are no longer considered property legally. Sometimes that in practice, it may work out to be something like that. But legally, we've moved a little bit. I don't know if that speaks to what you're asking, Nancy. I in some ways I feel hopeful that some opportunities, doors of opportunities are being opened, and on the other hand I feel discouraged because I see that much of the leadership is still male dominated and still in this patriarchal system. I don't know. Can you ask a more specific, I'm not sure where to go with that.
Can I try? I can just try summarizing. I hear you saying that there are...
No, just say something else. Don't summarize me. Just say something else.
Something else. How's that?
Yeah, thank you. Then we'll get an argument about whether or not you said what I said.
Well, fine then. Fine, I'll just say something else. It sounds like you asked about, Nancy asked about the patriarchy in general, and you responded with the statement you're working on that has to do with domestic violence. And the link there, of course, is assumed between patriarchy and something that we have, we see as a genuine, actual nastiness in the lives of a lot of people. Are there other genuine, actual nastinesses associated with this that we could talk about with patriarchy that we would like to see eliminated, and maybe how to do that, how best to do that?
I want to go back to what Nancy had concerns about the language issue.
She might argue with you, though.
She might.
I just want to say one of the things, the reasons that I feel that the language is important is because we create realities with our language. And every time we speak, we're training our brains a way to think. And as when the women's movement began, there was a lot of emphasis on avoiding words like chick and honey. And a lot of people said, oh, you know, what does chick have to do with women's rights? It has to do with changing the way you think. And changing the language helps you change the way you think. So the language may not be this, the language is not the central point. The language is a symptom of the problems with patriarchy. And by training ourselves to change the language, we're training ourselves to think in new ways. And that's why I see the language as important.
I want to do a quick illustration. With my students, sometimes I have them separate into men and women and have the men think up as many names for women as they can, and the women to do the same for men, not knowing that they're going to trade lists. And then they trade lists, and I have them categorize, forgetting that now that these are names for women or men. And the last time we did this, it came up that men were either slabs of meat or just sort of enlarged sexual organs, and women were either small furry animals or finger food. And when you think of the power differential in those two categories, it was a very interesting thing. So an illustration of what you see. Pastor Brown, please.
I think 65 bishops and all white male, I think that's nasty. When you consider the makeup of the church, I think that's nasty. And we can't
actually,
be
there's
serious.
One. There's one African American bishop and there's one Hispanic.
Okay.
So
63
white male bishops.
Still nasty.
So when you think of the makeup of the church, I mean, what's the percentage of the church that's women, and there are no women bishops? You know, it's hard to believe that a church is serious about something unless they have people in authority who represent the people. One of the things about Holden that makes Holden work and that drives people crazy is that everybody has a crack at doing Vespers and Mass. And people get up there and they do what feels right to them, you know. And it drives a lot of people crazy because that's, you know, people come away thinking, you know, what is this? You know, what are you doing? What are you saying? You know, but people are doing, you know, whenever you open something up to everybody, that's when you get a variety, you know. And it's very apparent that the leadership of the church is not opened up to everybody. And until that happens, these things are never going to change. You know?
Okay, Bill, Mike?
I'm not entirely familiar with the process by which bishops in the ELCA are selected, but I suspect that primarily those who become bishops were parish pastors. I know that the enrollment in seminaries is quite a substantial minority of women.
Is that true in Lutheran seminaries?
It's not true anymore in Lutheran seminaries. It was true, of course, until 20 years ago. But
well, what is true now?
I think 40% are women.
Okay.
46 to 40.
Okay.
Okay.
approaching parity, perhaps. How many of those women, though, one, aspire to, second, succeed in calls to the kinds of parish positions which normally lead toward becoming a bishop?
Do you want to phrase, is that a question?
That is a question. I don't know the answer.
But that's the whole patriarchal system.
Right.
You know, that's that system that
comes
in.
And where is the power structure that determines who receives a call to a particular parish?
I'm sorry. Can we hear from Christy? We've heard from you a couple times.
I was just going to say the other thing is that while, you know, you sort of have, can have an interim ethical agenda and a long-term ethical agenda, and then as an interim agenda, it may be a good thing to get women bishops as well as more people of color, women and men bishops. I mean, you still have a problem that you're even dealing with bishops. Now, I know I'm talking not as a Lutheran, so I have less emotional attachment to that structure, but I mean, you also have to, you know, like when Barbara Harris was inducted as an Episcopal bishop, you know, the question comes to mind, what good do I do as a woman of color? What came to her mind? What good can she do as a woman of color participating in the system? And there may be some good, but I think as women, if we are going to participate, we have to keep that really clearly in mind, that the whole line of bishops at the top making the decision in and of itself is a problem.
I forgot Jeff was the moderator, I thought Nick was.
No.
I'm just trying to take over in patriarchal.
I don't have any answers, but I really think we need to look at some kind of whole new structure, and I don't have any answers about what that's going to be. But when I look at the life of the church, I look at our kids in Sunday school, Bible school, being taught by women, the women who are meeting in Bible studies, women who are calling on their sick neighbors, women who are supporting each other, who are hurting, whatever, this is where I see, you know, the church alive, not the bishops and this whole setup. And somehow it needs to come from these people who are living out the life of the church. And I don't know how that's going to come about, but I think that's where it's at.
Mike, Nancy?
Well, you at one point asked about nastinesses. You know, the patriarchal system.
I'm sorry to use jargon.
And, you know, if we keep talking about, you know, structures and this and that, I don't think we get at the real evil. You know, that patriarchy perpetrates. And the real evil comes in terms of things like family violence. But even family violence is just touching the tip of the iceberg, you know, because, you know, what we're talking about in the patriarchal system is the maintenance of the whole violence ethic of our culture, you know, and it's not just in the family, it's in the whole world. And so to attack the patriarchal system in the church is to start transforming the violent system of the whole world. And, you know, there you're talking about a lot of nastiness.
Sounds like the gospel.
Yeah.
Nancy, you have something to say?
Yeah, well, I'm really glad that you brought that up about violence, because I think you're getting to what's really a greater concern. In some ways, I honestly have seen tremendous progress. I've worked in the church almost 25 years. And when I first worked in a church institution, everyone, of course, assumed that I was a lowly employee because I was a woman. I mean, women didn't do anything except clerical work there. That was all women ever did. Then there were a few women executives that came on the scene, And man, they never talked to the secretaries. My God, if they did, somebody would think they were a lowly secretary too. And anytime the men were all in a meeting and I was at my desk doing my work, they'd come out and ask me to go to the copy machine and make a copy of something for them. Get up from your work that you're doing, go make this copy for me. And I'd say, well, I'll show you how to work the copy machine. You can't do it. So that's all interesting. What happens when the numbers have changed as they have changed, and there are many more women executives, and there are some men who are in clerical positions, then not all the same assumptions can be made. But then people have to start wearing uniforms. And of course, all the women executives are sure to wear, their Klopfenstein business suits so that they can still be distinguished. So, all this stuff continues to perpetuate in all kinds of interesting ways. But some things that I think I have seen that are different is I think I am seeing some difference in decision-making processes. I really believe that. I don't see as much of a hierarchical decision-making process in some aspects of the church as I remember seeing at other times. And some of that view for me may be because I am in more of a power position than I was at some other time. It's amazing how level it looks when you're up higher. But but I've been very struck by someone that I have been involved in the church that has had a more collaborative decision-making model than I remember seeing 25 years ago. So those to me are some hopeful signs.
We wanted to say something, but before we do that, I just want to phrase another question that you can listen to or ignore. Something I heard in what you're saying is that it wasn't so much whether it was men or women who were over you, but sort of the way they treated the other people, whether you were treated in a patriarchal fashion by someone behaving in a certain fashion, or whether you were not treated that way. And we talked about this in men's group today, too. Are men just irretrievably patriarchal? Are we objecting to men? Are we objecting to maleness or patriarchy? I think that's a question worth addressing. So just one that occurred to me, it's now occurred to you. You can scrape it off or deal with it. We've got about 5 or 10 minutes remaining, so let's...
Yeah, I think we need to make a distinction that patriarchy can happen with men or women. There are men that do not act in a patriarchal manner, and there are women who do. So I think we have to remember... that. I think what scares me, you were saying you saw a positive thing. What I've seen is almost a retrenching and a going backwards. And for example, like the bishops coming out unanimously with a decision. I mean, knowing them personally, I really don't believe that the decisions they came out with were what they really believed personally. And yet, somehow they felt that they had to come out with a unanimous decision on issues. And to me, I think that's pretty sad, because that cuts off dialogue right at that point.
Like the parents being in line when they're disciplining the kids.
Yeah, and so to me, that's a very patriarchal thing. Sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead.
I think about patriarchy and sexism much like I think about racism, and that is that you can be in recovery but you're not over it if you're a man. And I think that women are justified never completely trusting men who can step back into systems that benefit them, just like African Americans. I don't mean it at the complete ultimate level that you just say men aren't trustworthy, white people aren't trustworthy, but in areas where we have not learned all that we need to learn, men are in recovery from patriarchy. White people are in recovery from racism if they're working at it. But we still act out racist things. We still participate in racist structures. We still participate in sexist things. So I think you have to be careful there. But question that really interests me is how change takes place. And you always start to sound like some kind of dangerous off the left end of things person if you suggest that maybe there are ways that change can take place outside of the formal structures of power, as well as kind of working to change things through the way the system operates, especially when something has the history that patriarchy does. It immediately suggests to me that the only way to change things can't come from within the system. And I wonder, I mean, kind of my imagination, I was sitting here, is really sparked by the notion of what if Lutherans got fired up with a kind of Martin Luther sort of a thing. You know, like follow the guy who started it all. And, you know, decided to work at change from the bottom up in the Lutheran Church, not only through the way in which power functions formally in the institution. I mean, that would mean some people, you know, just saying no. I mean, let's just say no to patriarchy for a Sunday or two. Let's just don't go to the meeting if all 63 men are going to be decided. You know what I'm saying? I mean, if it's really sick, there are ways, even ways that are not a complete disruption of institutional life. I think we need to think creatively in any of our churches. But why not Lutherans think creatively about a way to foment change outside those formal structures a little bit?